Rabbi Schneidman of Rabbi Anzal.
Yes. Tell me when you came to Lakewood.
Well, I came to Lakewood. It's even 52 or 53.
Yeah.
And I was in Yaakov Yosef at the time. The Rebbe that I had at the time, I came from the Shia, was Rabbi Ochavchik. And there were a group of Bachrim that went from there to Lakewood. At that time, Rabbi Dr. Hillel Weiss was the principal of RJJ, as it was known then, it was RJJ, who Grada was a big chassid of Rabbi Aaron.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, he was a big chassid of Rabbi Aaron. He, in fact, in a certain way, he was instrumental in us having this feeling of going to Lakewood to be under the, to learn by Rabbi Aaron, because the Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal, because at any occasion in the yeshiva in RJJ, he brought the Rosh Yeshiva in to speak. So when they had these campaigns for Tashbar, at that time in the Bukhram, the kids used to go out with the pushkis, you know, on the subways and so on. You used to do that too, right? So Rosh Yeshiva, he brought him in to like fire up the troops for Mizok. And the Rosh Yeshiva came to speak. And, well, of course, made a lasting impression on us. And at every occasion he had, and the Bracham and RJJ, like, to them, the Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal was a very, he was the Rosh Yeshiva, he was very important to them. In fact, there was a time, this is an interesting incident, there was a time when he came down to the east side, Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal, he set a share in the Adas. The Adas Yisrael, which is on East Broadway, it was run by Rabbi Goldberg. Rabbi Goldberg, it was on East Broadway. It was like a block and a half away from Yeshiva. And the older Bachram at the time went down to speak and learning with the Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal. This was at night. They went down to speak and learning with him. And I remember at that time I was a young kid, and I was standing outside. And I thought when the Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal leaves the Beis Medrash, after he gets done, I'll be able to run over and give him a shalom. So I waited out in the cold and peeked in every now and then and saw him, you know, speaking. The Bachman crowded around him, they talking to him. And then when he left the Beis Medrash, the Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal, anybody who's familiar knew that he used to, when he walked out in the cold, he used to turn up his lapel and take his coat and cover up his mouth. And nose with his lapel, and like there was a bachur on each side of him, and he walked right out of Beis Medrash, right into the car. Didn't look either right or left, so my chance of saying Shalom to him was gone at that moment. It just was out the window. At that time, I don't know, I must have been like maybe 11, 12, 11 years old, 12 years old at the time. But while we were in Lakewood, there was also a Talmud of Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal who came to say a share of Shai Shimonovitz, said a share in RJJ. So the Lakewood and Rav Aaron was very familiar to the Bachram and RJJ. And at the time, there was, I had an elder Bach who used to talk to me, and you know, and he convinced me with Davzitz in the land, and the place to go to was RJJ. It was Lakewood. To be by Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal.
That was what period? That's after that.
That's after this Meisah that I'm telling you about. Yeah, many years later, yes. Not many, but
the,
you know.
The 52, 53.
The period, you're right. That's when I left there. And we went there, and I went down with a group of my chaver, and we went down to take a bechina in Borough Park. At that time, like going to Borough Park for me was very, it was like an exotic place, a foreign country. You know, I had never been out of the East Side too much.
You lived on the East Side.
I lived on the Lower East Side, yes. So we went to his house, and I'm sure you've heard this from other people. There was not much furniture in his house.
Right. Repetition was good.
Yeah, well, the furniture was really, at least to say, it was like very very poor condition. That's putting it mildly. It was very, when we came to have, there's an interesting incident over there. Just to give you a picture of the Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal, you know, we have this picture of the Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal who was the Gadol Dor, that's true.
Right.
You know, but we have this picture of the Gadol Dor, and he ran everything and so on and so forth. But the truth of the matter is that he really, he did everything he did was on his own. He really had no helpers, very few. And just this incident, will illustrate what I'm talking about. Because when we went to take the Bechina, so at that time there was, I think there must have been an OU convention. I'm not sure, there was a convention and he wanted to send them a telegram. Either, you know, to direct them how they should use their funds, so on and so forth. At the person who was helping him write the telegram was Reb Shamshon Rafael Weiss. I don't know if you've heard of him. Yeah. So Reb Shimon Zal was telling him in Yiddish what he wanted to say. And Reb Shamshon Rafael Weiss wrote it down in Hebrew. And he was writing down in Hebrew what he wanted to say. Well, after he got done, he said to Reb Shimon Zal, he has to go now. He had to leave.
Oh.
Now, now who is going to get this telegram over to this convention? Who's going to do it? And it was a problem. There was nobody around. You push it. Nobody was there to do it. I don't know. It was wherever it was. It was someplace. It had to be sent over the phone. And, you know, to Western Union. Western Union would get it down there. You know, that's how it would have to be done. And there was nobody to do it for him. And we were three bachrim there. We had just come up from Bechina. He was in the middle of dictating his letter to Reb Shamshon Rafael Weiss. And then he got done. And he sat down with us, and then there was the problem. How is this letter going to be sent? So I volunteered to do it. Uh-huh. I volunteered to dictate this letter over the phone.
Uh-huh.
So I took this letter, which was originally said in Yiddish, translated into Hebrew. Then I translated it back into English to the operator of this Western Union to send it there. So then, I was a kid at the time, and I didn't really know every word. In fact, I didn't even know the word of Yidden Golis, which is the diaspora. My friend had to help me then. Uh-huh. Tell me, it's the diaspora, you know? That's what it is. But, and that's how the letter was sent.
Uh-huh.
And basically, that's how I took my Bechina to go to Lakewood, because after I got done translating this letter and sending it over to this convention, so basically it was about 40 minutes, 45. He didn't have too much time for us after that, you know? And we told him, I told him I wanted to go to Lakewood and so on and so forth, and I felt that. It does matter. So, at the and so in that time, I told him that the I felt I had to go to Lakewood, and I felt there was other place I could learn, and so on and so forth, and. If I would be in New York, my parents would put pressure on me to go to college, which was a big, all right. So, Baruch Hashem, I got into Lakewood. He accepted me. And after I graduated, how do I stop it? Well, you just press the red button because...
Yeah, it goes in, yeah.
Yeah, just the red. The red will do it. I came out to Lakewood after I graduated. And I came, so I graduated high school. The next day I came out to Lakewood. And
why did you get away with not going to college?
Well, first I told my parents I wanted to go out for a year, so they said yes. And that was the beginning, and that was it, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I just didn't want to go.
I just didn't want to go back. I understand that, but I'm just saying, how you got out of
here. Right, yeah, that was the, I was young at the time, and they didn't see it as a very big problem, me going out for a year.
Uh-huh.
So I went out for a year, and then after a year, once I was there, I was here, right, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And I came out, and that time the yeshiva was learning in the Durham, which they are now, too. And I remember that, and... the Russian and the right the cycle, and I began listening to. I was a young kid at the time. I'd never heard anything like that. Shum of the Rosh Hashanah. It was just like I'd never heard anything remotely similar to it. It was just like unbelievable. not that I understood it that well, but I just realized that I was into something which was like connected to something which was far beyond anything I'd ever imagined or anything I thought. And that was also just like looking at him, being with him. He was just like presented a picture of straight out of the past. And but at the same time, you didn't feel that that he didn't connect with you. Very interesting. You know, you did. I'm sure you had heard this from other people too. I don't know how it happened. I don't know how it was. And I guess it was because, you know, we just connected to his intense feeling for the Torah, and that he wanted to make every one of us into Lumbin, Dylan, and he just wanted to see us, like, really make it. And I guess that really, you know, was inspiring, inspired every one of us. And he used to say this year, I'm sure you heard this from other people, on Motzei Shabbos on Monday, and in the summer he said it Shabbos afternoon, which is a very difficult time. You know, Shabbos afternoon at that time, very difficult time to hear a shiur, an intense shiur, the way he said it.
Did you get used to it?
The Shabbos afternoon, I don't know if I ever really got that used to it. The Motzei Shabbos shiur I really got used to. That was good, Motzei Shabbos shiur, because it was a time when, he did it for that reason, I'm sure, because it was not an easy time for Bachman to be learning Motzei Shabbos, you know. Mm-hmm. So he said the Shia Motzei Shabbos. That was very good. He got all the Bachram, you know, was they got into it and they had the Shia then. He used to say, come out, at the beginning, he used to come out on Thursday and stay here till Monday. He said a Shia on Monday afternoon, and after the Shia he left. And of course, B'shas the Shia, he was very, very emotional about the Shia, very, he was carried away by the Shia, you know, and, very inspiring just to see him. You know, they say Rav Nosson used to tell me, when the Rosh Hashanah says the Shia, I'm able to be Mechadish Shmuz. Because when he says the Shia, all the Shorim of Torah open up. And I'm able to be Mechadish Shmuz when he says the Shia. Mm-hmm. That's just an idea of what, you know, how the inspiration that everybody had when he said the Shia.
You know, I never heard that.
Right. He also said, like, he used to say about, he had a sechsech with somebody here, which I did not know yet for me to get into at this point, but not really sechsech. Somebody had a tine on him, because you do, the Rosh Hashanah was like, he couldn't really bring zechan to share with him. He was just like...
was the tine outside, or entire?
Entire, because this person felt he couldn't bring zechan to Rosh Hashanah to share. Couldn't tell him anything different than what he said in the share.
Right.
So, like, you know, Rosh Hashanah said something in the Shia, that was it, that was... So he went over, he ran to Rav Nosson, he said to Rav Nosson, what kind of, you can't understand, you can't think on the Shia. So Rav Nosson said to him, he said, you can't have a time. He says, if you rip open your heart, you heard this story.
I know who it was. I heard from the person himself.
Oh, you heard from the person himself, yeah. Rabbi Eisman, right.
Yeah, but after Kabbalah, people say it over here. I want to say
it over here. It's Rashi Weinhaus, they'll find, what did he say, a Frank? Not a Frankfurt or a...
In school.
Yeah, in school, Frankfurt. You'll find the school, the school and me, Mayu. They'll find a stick of Mayu. But the Jews are with Rashi Weinhaus, and we'll find another Torah.
I heard
him,
I
heard him, so not Torah. You can find another Torah. Whatever it was, that was the... That was his.
The contrast that they made was that, like, Rabbi said to Rav Nosson by one of his Marlava Malkus, for his Shishik Avon, he said, "It's Megaruf Nagoy."
Yeah.
So I don't know, it's like between them what it was. So on the way back was Rav Shneir and the Mashgiach. And they told him what he meant by
Megaruf Nagoy, because inside there was a stick guy
he said, that's what I heard.
Right. The idea was the same idea.
Right.
And I'm sure you've also heard the story of the convention of the Yiddish system that was there on Lakewood at the time. Right. You never heard of that story?
Never.
A very interesting story. What happened was that Rosh Hashanah...
I heard the RCA convention, but didn't hear that one.
Right. They had this, they heard of the RSA convention.
Yeah.
But there was a convention, there used to be where the Willows is now, the apartments.
Yeah.
There was a hotel called the Willows.
Right, I remember. I remember that, the wreck.
The wreck, you remember. Well, anyway, that hotel, there was a convention of Yiddishisten. At that time, the Yiddishisten were dying.
Dying?
In other words, it's an organization.
They were dying out.
They were dying out. Right. There were no young people there. And I remember the Rosh Hashanah said a shir on Shabbos afternoon.
Yeah.
They came out for the weekend. So some of these guys came over Saturday afternoon to take a look at this shir. And they see this Rosh Hashanah, who's an older person, white beard, picture European Rosh Hashanah,
yeah,
straight out of Europe,
yeah,
this level, saying a shir for young American boys,
yeah,
who looked American at that time. At that time, the mode of dress isn't the way it is today.
Right.
I'm just saying somebody, Heinz, it's all black. It wasn't all black like it at the time. You know, that everybody dressed in pretty stylish also.
Yeah.
And you take a look at it, and they were just,
Absolutely.
They were blown away by it. They couldn't understand it. It was tzitzichta.
Yeah.
And they wrote up in there. So somebody told me later that they had in their magazine that they put out, they wrote about it, what the problem is, what's our problem,
yeah,
why is it that he's able to attract youth and we aren't,
right?
So they came to the conclusion, because he didn't bend on his ideals, he bent, whereas they, in order to attract the youth, were bending, they were straying away from the original
the
concept of what they wanted to do, and that's why they were losing it.
Uh-huh.
Very interesting. There's a certain truth to what they said,
yeah,
but they missed a neater point over here, is that really he was selling something which is chayim, which
right,
is, which they,
had,
they weren't.
Dead
they had a dead product. But the point that they made was also true, because yeah, it was a live product, because he didn't bend.
Right.
That's why it was live, because he just didn't bend on it. Right. In other words, and the Bukhram clued into that also. They're very connected with the fact that he was no, he didn't, he didn't modify, he didn't.
That he didn't bend, because they knew themselves that they have it. They knew what they had is not Emmet.
They didn't understand that, I don't think you're right.
But deep down, they couldn't be stubborn on, because they had nothing to be stubborn about.
Right.
Deep down, they felt that way.
Whatever it was, in other words, this happened. There was an interesting thing also. My father had a shul in New York, and those days, Balbatim used to come out like with Balbatim.
Right.
And Yidden
right,
came out, traditional Jews. No, Jews, a lot
right,
of Jews came out. It was a Jewish city.
Right.
Not from, but Jewish. And my father's Balbatim came out, and they also went. So, Rashi was talking about Dantzang Yeshir. So one of them asked me, well, what did he just say? So at the time, I thought it was just such a funny thing. I mean, how was I going to explain to him what he just said? They didn't understand, somebody who doesn't learn, a friar, will not understand at all what it means to
right,
say shir. Just
right,
doesn't understand, has no idea.
Right.
So I was a little fresh to him at the time, which I shouldn't have been. So I right, said to him, well, if you're going to walk into a college and a physics professor just gave a lecture,
yeah,
so what are you going to say? What did he just say? You realize that he said something which
yeah,
is beyond
yeah,
you.
Right.
Yeah, so what are you... So it was... Maybe a little fresh on my part, but this is, but it bothered me at the time, because
yeah,
he just asked me, well, what did he say? As if he said like a nice word on Chumash,
yeah,
that he could,
congrats.
No, because what happened was at that time, we were very sensitive to the fact that we weren't appreciated by the world. The learning Torah to them was less like, yeah, was learning something which is, didn't mean anything, it was just like trying to, had no value and so
right,
on and so forth. So we were very self-defensive about it,
right,
maybe a little too much. But Baruch Hashem, it's not here today.
Right.
Right.
But
in a certain way, that's what he instilled in us, a certain pride
right,
and a tremendous amount of courage
yeah,
to face up to the Nisyonis, because we knew that he really was on the firing line every day, for every one of us, for everybody. He just was there taking it. And he took a lot from his Balabatim, from everybody. They just didn't understand him. And the truth of the matter is, his closest Balabatim didn't understand him. This I know. They didn't understand what he really wanted. And I mean, I don't want to name any names over here, but I'm talking about his closest Hasidim that would do anything for him. And they were really, really ibegegeben, they really would do anything for him because they saw in him somebody who was really special, special, special. But they didn't really understand what he wanted. They just didn't understand it because what he wanted was like just learning Torah, just for the sake of learning Torah. And to them, they didn't understand it at all. They just couldn't understand that. First of all, a lot of them were not Litvisha, you know, and they were, so, you know, they came from a different background, different environment. You know, a Rebbe could do that, but a Rebbe, an Einikel could do that, you know, but like, I'm a guy, go do this. You know, they went to business. You got a business, you work.
Right.
And you're from a Yid, but here to go sit and learn. It just was like something, they didn't understand it at all. They didn't understand him. What? Yes, they didn't understand it at all. So, you know, they understood, you know, to be even more from. But this concept of like, you know, really understanding the Rajbah just because you want to understand the Rajbah was just like totally foreign to everybody in the United States.
It
was on the way out in Europe too then.
The Mishkezen in the Heim, right.
Yeah, I remember when I went to Rav Shneia before he was Nifta, Rav Shneia said, before the war, you know, people have this idea of Europe, and I'm sure you heard this also.
Well, that Europe spoke about it a lot.
Yeah, right. I mean, Europe was like really bankrupt before
right.
the war.
Right.
He said that it was not a chiddush that a Yid and Vashya have 10 children and not have anybody say Kaddish for him.
Wow.
It was not a chiddush, he said. So, you know, really, you were talking, it was going down, it was Haluch HaPoiches. But this was and then, of course, there was the Shabbos Tish, which was very unusual. When I first came to Lakewood, there was a tremendous amount of decorum in the dining room during Shabbos. First of all, you know, when we came in to eat, he sat at the tish. It was very unusual. The truth of the matter is, it is unusual because he ate with us. He really lived with us. I don't think there was another Russian in Europe. Two incidents. Two things. I want to finish over two things.